Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We know you probably have a lot of thoughts, comments, and questions coming off that big W on Sunday, so send all of those to us using hashtag BucksLive. And, man, what a great way to start the season. I know there were so many questions because things had been just so crazy. Of how is the team going to respond to the different schedule and not having played in week one, and everybody else has gotten a week under their belts. How impressed were you with just the mental side of how the team came out there?
Very impressed. And, you know, I went back and looked at what Coach Cutter said on the Wednesday before the game when everybody had come back from leaving because of Hurricane Irma. And he was asked that question because it was the obvious question. Do you think the team will struggle with this long layoff, with some players not having played a game in almost a month? And he said, maybe. I mean, he basically, paraphrasing, he said, we won't know until we get there. I mean, it is what it is, though. There's nothing we can do about it.
A bit unprecedented, too. Right. And didn't have exactly a situation to look at and be like, well, this is how it went for them when they had a hurricane and had a game.
Well, there was no real time to adjust. You just kind of had to do it. And that's basically what he said. He said, it is what it is. That's the situation we got, and we'll see what happens. And then you saw, you know, the score tells you enough, 29-7. But I was also impressed with what appeared to be a pretty – Coach Cutter said it wasn't a clean game, but in some respects it was, in that we only had four penalties. We only had one penalty on offense, and I think that was a holding, which holding can happen anytime. It's not really one of those things because you're rusty. Those are false starts and illegal formation penalties and illegal shifts, and we didn't have any of those. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. Looking at, we'll start with the offense, I guess. I mean, first of all, it's the first regular season game that you had. You know, all of the weapons we've been waiting to see and using a game planning, you know, as compared to preseason where you don't really show what's up your sleeve. Yeah. So what do you feel like we can take from the new look offense?
Well, and you make a good point there. We also didn't show a lot more that's still up our sleeve because, as Coach said many times during August, we're installing everything so it's there. But then in any particular game, you're only using a percentage of it. And then next game against Minnesota, you'll see some of the same plays, but you'll see some new stuff. I did notice – and you can say O.J. Howard only had one catch, right? But he was targeted by Jameis on the very first play of the game, running down the seam. The play didn't work, but, I mean, that was the attempt. And because it was tipped away, I think it had a shot at working, but a linebacker made a nice play. And O.J. Howard was on the field for about 65% of the plays. The only skill position player that played more than him was Mike Evans. So he was out there because he's a great blocker. He's going to make a big impact on this season. DeSean Jackson played as much as you would expect, which was a lot. And he was targeted a lot. Jameis threw to him a lot, and not just deep balls. And you and I were talking about this earlier. There was a couple near misses, and we're going to get some of those. You could see that the plays are working. They just didn't quite hit. But there was also a lot of more underneath throws to DeSean than maybe expected in the first game. And it makes me remember that while DeSean's very good at getting behind the defense, he's also, in his career during that span, been one of the best yak players in the league, yards after the catch. So none of these plays really materialize that way, but if you throw it to him underneath enough, eventually he's going to hit a seam and be gone.
I think it was Dave Moore that I heard say this on the postgame show, but I'm not positive, how you can try to simulate the route running, especially deep routes and guys just going, you know, blazing speed during practice. He said, but when it's in a game, you have that little extra oomph that you can't really simulate in a practice, and it can make it harder to connect on some of those when you have the huge emotion, especially the first game of the season, you feel like you've been waiting forever, and either the receiver running faster than you even expect, or Jameis having even more, you know, in his throw than normal. Yeah. And so those couple near misses for DeSean, he was saying that he didn't feel like that was as big a deal maybe as people might think, that it's just that first game that you've been practicing and you had it figured out, but now there was more emotion behind it.
Well, on the one going towards the end zone with the ship, you know, Jameis had to move around a little bit before he let that go, and you saw DeSean running this way and expecting maybe it over this shoulder, and he had to adjust over that shoulder, and then he couldn't quite reach it because his momentum was taking him away. You know, if Jameis in practice is standing back there with nobody bothering him and he launches that ball, he probably puts it right where DeSean was expecting, but in a game you have to adjust to the little things that happen. I guess the one that was a little bit disappointing was the deep one to Charles Sims, because that was pretty clean play. And he was open and just was overthrown.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that has been the unexpectedly not as good as you would have expected part of Jameis's game in the first 2 years. But Coach Cutter says he's been much better this summer heading into the season in that regard. So I think we're going to see it, but on that one it was a miss.
Right. Okay. And then looking at the offensive line, how did you feel about their play? And, you know, we've been waiting to see Ali Marpet in action at center in a regular season game as well. How did you feel like he fared?
Well, again, one penalty, right? That's awfully good. I didn't hear much about those guys, so I assume that's pretty good. That's what you
that's
want.
That's true. You never want to hear their names. That's what's unfortunate for them. Coach, hearing their names bad.
Coach was saying Jair Sweezy had a nice debut. He says it's not always pretty, but he's out there, you know, basically didn't use this word, but he's out there mauling and getting to the second level and playing really hard. And coach thinks that will rub off on the rest of the team as the season goes along. Both Evan Smith and Kevin Panfil got to play, and that was by design because they, even though Kevin's the designated starter, the coaches really liked how Evan Smith played throughout the preseason, and it just was an opportunity to give him a shot. Now, somewhere down the line, you're probably going to decide on one of those two guys and roll with it. But for now, both of them had some, you know, Kevin had some injury issues, and Evan was sick earlier in the week. So since neither one of them was maybe 100%, they kind of shared the snaps, and that went well. So that's good for Evan.
Yeah, that's true. And it shows, again, why we talked about how important the depth is there, just the ability to do that you can tell. They have such confidence in their quote-unquote backups who just were starters so recently that they really view it as very interchangeable.
Yeah, that's good.
And looking at the running game, I know that was an area that we'd all been wondering how that was going to look with no Doug Martin. You know, at least one of those games is now out of the way, and it was a W. You're getting even closer to him being back. But what did you see from Jacquizz Rodgers, Charles Sims, Peyton Barber, all these guys that really came up to try and fill those shoes?
The running game was good. It was 117 yards. It didn't quite hit. They got two benchmarks they want to hit in a game, either 125 yards or if there's really not enough opportunities to get that, then 4.5 yards per carry. Didn't quite hit either one of those, but just because they were able to stick with it, it was still an effective part of the game. Early on, Jacquizz ran well enough. No, there weren't a lot of flashy plays, but he ran well enough to keep the Buccaneers from getting behind the chains. And so, you know, we completed like 58% of our third downs because a lot of those third downs were third and five and third and four. We didn't have to convert a lot of third and 12s and stuff like that. And that was because the running game was effective, if not flashy. And then it got down there to the one, and Jacquizz was able to pound it in. And then in the second half, when you're winning by 29 points most of the way, of course you're going to run the ball.
Right.
And sometimes that's effective. It's always effective in running out the clock. It's doubly effective if you're moving the chains and really running out the clock. And Peyton Barber looked really good. Coach says he got a little bit tired with a bunch of carries in a row, but other than that, I think he looks like one of our most improved players this year, Peyton
Barber.
That's
huge. That's awesome. And Mike Evans, we talked a little bit about DeSean Jackson and O.J. Howard, but Mike Evans, obviously, opening touchdown for him with the first passing touchdown. And what did you see from him of what we just keep talking about? We forget how young he is and how every year he just seems to get better and better.
Yeah, Mike Evans looked like Mike Evans.
Which is what you want.
He was targeted 9 times, had 7 catches, and every single one of his catches moved the chains. Everyone produced a first down, including 3 that were on third down. Last year, Mike Evans, every ball he caught on third down, and there were 28 of them, produced a first down. He was one of only 2 players in the entire league who did that, and the other guy only had 11 catches. So he was already the guy, the go-to guy on third down, and he just proved it over again. But so many of his catches produced first downs, and you know, he's moving the chains, and he had the typical, he's got the guy right on him, but he still reached up and gets the toe taps. I mean, he's just so good at that.
He makes it look so easy, too. Yeah. We kind of forget sometimes how good he is because he makes it look so easy.
And you also made a good point of how young he is. He just turned, I believe he just turned 24 in August. Mm-hmm. Jameis Winston won't turn 24 until January. I looked it up. No team's ever had a guy reach his 50th touchdown pass and a receiver reach his 25th. He's got 28. Touchdown catch on the same team, both of them under the age of 25. So, in other words, you don't get this very often.
That's true.
You don't get a guy who's already a borderline star at quarterback and already obviously very much a star at receiver, both of them under 25 at the same time.
That's so true.
I think the closest example I came to it was Dan Marino and Mark Clayton, and we know how that went.
Yeah. And we had Mike actually on the radio show yesterday, and we were kind of asking about that of – you know, his age, and now he was talking about he's a captain now for the first time this year, and that he really feels like a vet now. And he's
that's
like,
awesome.
I know I'm kind of young, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels like I've been playing football for a really long time. And I think that's so great to hear that even it's the perfect scenario where he's young, which means we could have him for a really long time, but he doesn't play or act or think like he is young, which is a perfect combination.
Presumably he hasn't reached his peak yet. So we still get the peak
years.
Ridiculous. You know, when we come back, I'd like to talk about a player on defense who fits that bill as well and let you try to guess who it is that is young but plays like a seasoned veteran.
Ooh, I like this game. All right, well, continue to send in all of your thoughts, questions, comments. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk defense when we come back.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
We call this the jungle. It's our house today, man. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house.
Yeah. Now takes the snap. Looks to his right. Look, crossing round throw. Caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Levante David quarterback sack. His second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking, James going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaway. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercept to the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We have this segment where we're going to talk about defense, and then our final segment, we're going to get to your questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. All right, so who is your young player that doesn't play young on the defense
and
that you want to talk about?
And I'm stealing this line from Clinton McDonald in the locker room after the game, who said he called Kendall Beckwith a rookie non-rookie. He said that means he's young, but he plays like a veteran.
Which is awesome.
I was so impressed with Kendall Beckwith in that game. He played something like 85% of the snaps. That wasn't supposed to happen. He was the starting strong side linebacker, and then Quan got hurt in the first half, and he played the rest of the game in the middle. And so he was out there, and that meant he was also in the nickel package. He replaced Quan in the nickel package. So he was playing virtually every snap from that moment on, and he looked great. And, he was a big part of why that run defense only allowed 20 yards on 16 carries. You know, he had five tackles. He had two tackles for loss. He was only credited with one pass defense, but I think they kind of jobbed him out of another one. I thought he had two in the span of four plays down there when they had all those drives in a row trying to keep the shutout. I just was really impressed with Kendall. His story just keeps getting better. I mean, he fell a little bit to us in the third round in the draft because he had an ACL tear in November. Weren't even sure he was going to be ready to start the season, and then he was ready to start camp.
It's incredible.
There's been no setback. Now he's starting, and he's taking over for Quan Alexander, who's pretty much an established star at this point, in the middle of his first game, and doing great.
That's an incredible series of things to get him in that position. And we had talked about how linebacker was one of the positions that had a lot of questions on after mm-hmm. Levante and Quan.
Not anymore.
And boy, that's got to make everybody feel even better because, I mean, you know that we always hope that they're going to be healthy. But as we saw, I mean, even if it's just a little something,
right?
You never know if they're going to be out for even just a half or something like that. To have someone like him, and especially at that middle linebacker position that you feel that comfortable with, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, and then Levante went down late in that game, and I almost jumped out of the press box in despair. but then it looked like there has been no word on this, but it looked like it was cramps, by the way they were stretching out his leg, which would be the best case scenario.
For sure.
When at first you see him lying back there holding his leg.
Yeah.
I was really,
everyone collectively held their breath for a little bit, I'm sure.
Being without Quan and Levante for a period of time. But in addition to Kendall, Darius Glanton and Cam Lynch came on at the end of the preseason and really sort of solidified that group. And Devontae Bond hasn't even played yet, and he was looking good before he got hurt. So I think you've answered the question about if you have linebacker depth.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
Now, just think about if Kendall – it's one game, so I shouldn't get too excited about it, even though I am. But think if Kendall Beckwith is able to make the same sort of instant impact that both Quan and Levante did in their rookie years, that's an incredible threesome of linebackers.
That's very true. And I'm glad you brought up Cam Lynch. Obviously, he had the recovered – fumble on the special teams that was caused by Ryan Smith. And, you know, we talked so much about when we lost Russell Shepard, what that was going to mean. And we talked about Ryan Smith that looked really good last year. He just continues to make huge plays on special teams. And it shows what a huge turn that can be, that we talk so much about offense and defense. But, man, that special teams unit can be a big game changer.
That play was great, and it was also very fortunate. And I did feel, especially in the first half, that we got a lot of breaks. Mm-hmm. We would get third down defensive holding calls that are killers for the other side. That was – Brian Anger's a great, great punter and had a wonderful year last year, but that was not a good punt. It shanked off his foot and went towards the sideline, but then it hit and stayed in bounds and rolled all the way down, like, inside the 20. So already it's a good thing. And then, you know, I think their rookie made a regrettable mistake in trying to return that. And, and Ryan and Cam were there to make him pay for it.
Which was huge. And just turnovers overall, that one being one of them, and then a couple of the defense force, Robert McClain and Quan Alexander, both with interceptions, one of them turning into a pick six. I mean, that we talked about how the offense – looked really good in a lot of ways, but part of that is they got a lot of help from the defense. And in exact, I mean, that was just both sides of the ball, the game plan you want for every game of the takeaways converted to points and the offense doing their job. Yeah. That was huge.
Jameis came into the locker room after the game saying, defense wins championships, and he was smiling from ear to ear. He would love it if he, you know, he didn't have statistically an incredible game, but didn't need to. And that would be nice if that happened a lot. And then he mentioned a lot when he was talking later about complimentary football, which is a phrase we've heard here the last couple of years. The Buccaneers' three touchdowns in that game were a 13-yard one-play drive, a 35-play drive, and a defensive touchdown. So the offense didn't have to make 80-yard drives for us to pull away in that game, and that's complimentary football.
So outside of the linebackers that we talked about, who really stood out to you on defense and just who really was making that unit do their part so well?
Well, Gerald McCoy had four quarterback hits. You know, he didn't have a sack, and we only had one sack, but we really moved Mike around a lot. And, of course, Noah Spence had the strip sack, which he's becoming pretty darn good at. He's had four of them in 18 career games.
Yep.
And so Gerald McCoy also did very well, of course. But the one guy I wanted to mention was TJ Ward. And you and I were talking about that. You were impressed as well. And I think you told me that Anthony Beck broke down one of his plays.
Yeah, so film session is up right now if you want to go see the TJ Ward tackle for loss. It was, and we knew it was good, but when you break it down and Anthony really talks about it, you can see how amazing it really is, and even where his eyes are going, that he just even forgets about the ball for a second and finds that spot to go through. It's a pretty, it's a pretty great play.
It's instincts, right? Mm-hmm. That's what made him such a good player in Denver. I saw the play happening because I believe that was his very first play on defense as a Buccaneer. He came into the game and we all remarked at it, oh, I think TJ Ward's in for the first time. So I was watching him and he made that play. And you, I'm glad you brought up the film session because it's one of my favorite things we put on the website. And I would suggest go watch it. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But just from the naked eye, he's knifing through these, what are supposed to be these blockers on the sweep, and he gets them.
That are a wee bit bigger than him.
It was a phenomenal play. It reminded me of the type of play that Levante makes a lot when the other team is trying to stretch a run wide and he gets through what is supposed to be a wall of blockers and gets him in the backfield.
Which is huge. And then also, you know, we talked about the pick six Robert McClain had that, you know, we had been wondering for a long time who was going to get that starting spot. He and JV and Elliott were really in a battle for it. Mm-hmm. Coach announced basically on Friday that it was going to be Robert who got that starting spot, and it looked like he did a pretty good job of showing why. I mean, there were definitely, you know, a couple plays that still went his direction, but at least that one you could tell he was very much ready to make the play.
There were a lot of quick slants early on when other things weren't working and out of the slot, and that's a hard thing to cover. Mm-hmm. At least none of them turned into really big plays.
Right.
I wouldn't pretend to know if any of those plays were considered breakdowns on anybody's part. Sometimes the offense just makes good plays. Mm-hmm. And you throw a really good run and throw a really good slant really well, sometimes that's hard to stop no matter how good you are.
Right.
It's depending on what defense you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he made the big play when we needed it. It came up big, so it was a nice debut for him.
Yep. All right. Well, we still have one more segment coming up. We're going to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Any of your thoughts, comments, questions, any of that. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. It's time for us to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in throughout the entire segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. First one comes from Iceberg.
Iceberg.
And he wants to know, does Godwin have the skill set to play in the slot? I love first down hump, but Godwin's skill set is hard to keep off the field.
Yeah, I think they do believe, and I think they've trained him in all of the spots. So, you know, he's more of an outside guy in at Penn State, so this is learning. It's a learning curve for him, I imagine. But I think they could foresee him taking snaps at all the spots. He got in there a number of times in that game, but I think it was mostly on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people were asking about his performance overall, and just was it opportunities? Yeah. Was it that, you know, that he seemed to be doing his job out there, it just wasn't always the opportunities?
Right. He had the one throw in his direction in the end zone, and I believe on that play he had come in for DeSean Jackson. DeSean had been playing a lot of snaps and needed a rest, I think, because it was getting kind of hot out there. And I believe he was in for Jackson on that play. And, you know, the throw just didn't find him. But I assume the route was fine. But I also saw him. It seemed like a lot of the times he was in there, we ran the ball. So already I think they think he's a good blocker. So that'll help him get on the field.
Okay. Daniel wants to know if you were a Bucs fan before you started working for the team.
I was not. I grew up in St. Louis, and so, you know, we had the Cardinals, but nobody really cared that much about the football Cardinals because it's a baseball town.
Right.
And then they left, so I'm not a fan of that team anymore.
I always liked, a little bit
bitter. Just a little.
Just a
team. I always liked the Chargers when I was a kid. They had great uniforms, and that was the Don Coryell, you know, Dan Fouts, all those amazing. Their offense was amazing. And when I was a kid, I didn't really understand football the way I do now. So all I knew about was the quarterbacks and the receivers and the
linebacks. Yeah.
I couldn't have told you. It's probably named a single defensive player in the league.
That's funny.
I came here in 92 and became a Bucs fan for obvious reasons.
Yep. Doug says, since the Bucs had a nice lead by halftime did the offense turtle up in the second half not to show more tape to the Vikings?
That could be true, sure. I mean, what's the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they were still trying to move the ball and still trying to score, but it definitely became a very run-heavy approach, and that only makes sense. I can guarantee you that Derek Cutter does not care whether we won that one by 22 points or 42 points. He does not care. The goal is to win by score one more point than your opponent. So if you're up 29-0, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be wide open. Mm-hmm. And then that person, I can't remember the name you said, makes a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but why show stuff that you don't have to?
Right.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Kevin says, what is the outlook for the linebacker core and defending the edge?
Okay, does outlook mean like the guys that are hurt? We talked about that a lot in the last segment.
Right. So
here's what's going to happen with injuries on Wednesday and the rest of this week. Somebody's going to ask coach about it on Wednesday mm-hmm. and say, we're going to have an injury report.
An injury report for you, yeah.
You have to put an injury report. You have to say whether they practiced or not. And on Friday, you have to give a game status. But otherwise, you really don't have to be.
Right.
You don't have to give out information. You don't have to volunteer information. So I don't think we'll know a whole lot about that. But I do know that Quan has been saying positive things on his Twitter account. So,
right, yeah.
You know, we can feel good about that.
We'll go with that. The Jimenez family has a couple uniform questions. One, they said, can you explain the rules with the helmet situation that won't let us wear throwbacks? And also, they said they love the Color Rush uniforms. Can we wear those at any time, or are they only allowed for the Color Rush game?
Yeah, that's only allowed for the Color Rush game. And I'm pretty sure this year our Color Rush game, it's going to be Atlanta wearing the red. Isn't it the Atlanta game? In Atlanta?
It's here. It's at home for the Bucks.
Oh, the one late when we do the John Gruden
mm-hmm, yeah.
at the Monday Night Football?
Thursday Night Football.
I'm completely confused.
Yeah, it's the New England game, Thursday Night Football at home for
yeah,
us.
Maybe that person should ask that question to somebody else, because obviously I'm not really doing very well with that one.
Obviously not your highest priority.
Why don't you answer that one?
I know, right?
The helmet thing, I'm not even sure if that's really the point anymore. The first year that we stopped doing the throwback, it was because they had this new rule about the players had to wear the same helmets all year, and so switching out to the white helmet with the Buck, with the Bruce logo on it, became a problem.
Mm.
Now, I've never heard that has subsequently been the problem. I wonder if the emphasis now is really just, you know, because we only changed uniforms, what was that, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm, not very long.
Really just emphasizing those uniforms right now.
Okay. Austin wants to know, how dominant can this defense be this year, and can you compare them to the 0-2 Bucks D?
Well, not yet. But, of course, they could be dominant. That defense in 0-2 was one of the best defenses of all time. Their numbers against the pass were ridiculous. They got a lot of turnovers, and we're obviously, with the second half of last year and the beginning of this year, looking like very good at that as well. So maybe, I think we had 35 interceptions that year, which is just a stunning amount. That's more than two a game. That'll be a hard pace to match, but I'll tell you, one area this defense could actually be better than the 0-2 defense is against the run. The Bucks 0-2 defense was fairly average against the run, but just so unbelievably good against the pass that they were number one overall and only allowed something like 13 points a game, some average like that. That's a really hard thing to match. Can they be that? Of course, and I know that's they're all pretty confident that they're going to be a fantastic defense, but until we see a string of really dominant performances, I don't think we can say that yet.
Okay. Simba says, are you concerned about Winston's deep ball? And then he also asked, based off last game, do you see Peyton getting more runs than Sims?
Okay. That's two different questions. Yep. I'm not concerned about Jameis's deep ball because even though it didn't really work out in game one, Coach Cutter, who really is not one for hyperbole, he's pretty much going to tell it how it is, has said that Jameis was a lot better in that regard throughout training camp, the offseason, the preseason. So when you get a larger sample size, I think we're going to see that improvement. So I'm not concerned about it yet. You would have liked to have seen it be better in game one, but I'm not concerned as of yet. What was the second question?
If Peyton would get more runs than Sims.
Well, he already did. He had 10 and Charles only had 2.
Right. He was saying, based on last game, do you see that happening, to happen?
Yes. It really very much looked like. And coach said they really didn't purposely go into that game planning to basically just run Jacquizz in the first half and wait until the second half to use Peyton. That's just sort of the way it worked out. He said the original plan was to do it more like they did in the second half with those guys kind of coming in and out, Peyton and Jacquizz, and they're handling your first and second down carries right now. Charles is really going to be in that third down role with some occasional carries.
Okay. Bryce said, do you expect to see OJ and Deshaun get more looks in the passing game moving forward?
Well, like I said, Deshaun had 7 targets. That's a lot. I mean, that's only 2 less than Mike Evans had. I thought we threw to him a lot. So I don't know if he's necessarily going to need to get more. We just have to hit on more of them. OJ Howard only had 3 targets. But he was, you know, it's a matter of opportunity if you're out there on the field enough. And clearly, since he played more snaps than anybody except Mike Evans among the skill guys, they want him out there on the field. So, yes, he'll get more opportunities.
Okay. All right. I know there were a few more questions we didn't get to. I'll try and save them for Friday's show, so tune in then. I think we're going to have Robert McClain as our guest, which should be fun to hear about that pick six from his point of view. So make sure you have all those questions ready for us throughout the week, and we'll see you then.